dedicate this talk actually to the people of Burma, particularly to the monks, to all the people of Burma, everyone who has had enormous courage, but especially the monks. Probably no one in this room has had to walk peacefully into the face of overwhelming force. It takes a lot of courage. And I look forward to the day when Burma is free. When Leela and I were planning, basically talking about what kind of talks are we going to give, coordinating a little bit, we decided, since our theme is awareness and love, that both of us in the middle of the retreat would give a talk on this subject, and we didn't coordinate any further beyond that, just to see what would happen as a kind of experiment. And it's been wonderful. I so much appreciated the fact that Leela talked last night, for example, about bringing these powerful qualities to a relationship and to intimate relationship. It's not a subject that would have occurred to me, and so and probably not one that I can manage right now. So I'm just very grateful. And I came up with something quite different. I'd like to start with words that I try to read in every retreat. Those of you who have come to this retreat can chant along if you'd like. Have come to retreats that I've led can chant along. The Buddha to the Kalamas. Do not believe in anything simply because you have heard it. Do not believe in traditions because they have been handed down for generations, like Buddhism or Christianity. Do not believe in anything because it is spoken and rumored by many, and especially do not believe in anything merely on the authority of your teachers and elders. He included himself in that. Now, obviously, it includes the person speaking tonight. But after observation and reflection, when you find that anything agrees with reason and is conducive to the good and benefit of one and all, then accept it and live up to it. He's basically saying, see for yourself. And that's what we're doing. So here we share a lot of concepts with you because there's a big teaching in this tradition. A lot of concepts with you that could or may not be helpful to you. But ultimately, they're only concepts. If they're not useful to you, please ignore them. You know, I personally feel that the Buddha's teachings are true. Feel it deeply that the Buddha's teachings are true, but I don't suppose that I can actually convey those teachings in a wholly accurate and truthful way. So take what I have to say with a grain of salt, if you would. And I'm feeling especially a kind of humility about this particular subject of talking about awareness and love. They're so big. I can feel their power, but I don't know how I can convey their power. I feel that awareness and love, and we'll talk more about it, but are both the means and the goal of the path. They're both the means and the end of our spiritual practice, of our spiritual journey. So I love the way that Leela last night, you know, it's hard for us to convey the power of these forces in our lives. And Leela turned to Shakespeare. Why don't we turn to the eloquent? And she quoted one of my favorite poems ever, the sonnet, "Let me not to the marriage of true minds admit impediments. Love does not alter when it alteration finds." The extraordinary steadiness of love. It is an ever-fixed mark. And then also that quality of love, of unconditional love, the quality of loyalty, the fact that it will go anywhere. And these words that I think that are just magnificent. Shakespeare says that love bears it out even to the edge of doom. It's like, that's Shakespeare. I mean, I don't know anybody who can write like that. Anyone else who can write like that. Bears it out even to the edge of doom. I just can speak personally for myself in terms of some of the love that I have felt in my life. My very beloved brother died in 1972. So it's going on 36 years now. And I cared a lot about him when he was alive. And actually, the quality of love for him has deepened and purified in the decades since he died. And just in terms of bearing it out even to the edge of doom, I would do anything for him. You know, over the edge of doom. And go anywhere. Do you have a sense that we're out of the territory of Hallmark now? You know, this is something else. In this culture, we talk about love, and this four-letter word has been cheapened to the point where, in a way, it's a pity that we have to use it. Because what generally we speak of love in this culture is actually attachment. Exactly the opposite of love. Love does not grasp. Love does not hold on. It's open-handed, just as it is open-hearted. It's not what we conventionally think of. I mentioned last night, the Buddha said that love is the greatest healing power in the entire universe. So to me, one just a metaphor that I find useful in describing awareness and love is to think of them as great lights that illuminate our world, that illuminate our reality. They illuminate this world of suffering and confusion. And Leela used that image last night when she was talking about awareness, shining the light of awareness into the dark corners. But I think it's equally true of love as a light. And so I'm going to turn to somebody who's eloquent to express this. And this is the Buddha using this metaphor. Beautiful passage. Just as whatever light there is of stars is not worth 1/16th part of the moon's light, in shining and beaming and radiance, the moon's light far excels it. And just as in the last month of the rains, in the autumn, when the heavens are clear, the sun, as it climbs the heavens, drives out all darkness from the sky with its shining and beaming and radiance. And just as, when the night is turning to dawn, the morning star is shining and beaming and radiating, so too, whatever kinds of worldly merit there are, all are not worth 1/16th part of the heart deliverance of loving kindness. In shining and beaming and radiance, the heart deliverance of loving kindness far excels them. There are many good things that we can do, but the Buddha is basically saying the best thing we can do, besides getting clear and wise, is to love. That has greater power. And in another passage, this is beautiful, he says, to sustain a loving mind even for the duration of the snap of a finger makes one a truly spiritual being. Even for the duration of a snap of a finger. So, awareness in its power as a light, as it were, shines its impartial knowing on all things. Just as the sun doesn't choose to shine on that object but not on that one, the sun will shine impartially on all objects. So awareness shines its knowing on all things. And equally so, love shines its acceptance, its impartial acceptance on all things. And just as the sun doesn't choose to shine on this thing but not on this thing, loving kindness, the power of love, shines on all things impartially, without choosing, unconditionally. So just to borrow from the eloquent ones a little more, because I don't have words for it, I'd like to actually borrow from someone that I think is actually even more eloquent than the Buddha on the subject of love, and to honor the center that we're in, from a Christian, Paul of Tarsus. This is a newish translation of 1 Corinthians 13, the New English Bible. And now I will show you the best way of all. I may speak in tongues of men or of angels, but if I am without love, I am a sounding gong or a clanging cymbal. I may have the gift of prophecy and know every hidden truth. I may have faith strong enough to move mountains, but if I have no love, I am nothing. I may give away all I possess, or even give my body to be burned, but if I have no love, I am none the better. Love is patient. Love is kind and envies no one. Love is never boastful, nor conceited, nor rude, never selfish, not quick to take offense. Love keeps no score of wrongs, does not gloat over other people's sins, but delights in the truth. There is nothing love cannot face. There is nothing love cannot face. There is no limit to its faith, its hope, and its endurance. Love will never come to an end. Are there prophets? Their work will be over. Are there tongues of ecstasy? They will cease. Is there knowledge? It will vanish away. For our knowledge and our prophecy alike are partial, and the partial vanishes when wholeness comes. And then finally, one final borrowing on the subject of the great shining power of love comes from another Christian, Augustine of Hippo, Saint Augustine. And I love this, it could come from the Buddha. When a thing is everywhere, the way to find it is not to travel, but to love. That's non-separation. I feel that awareness and love are actually our natural state. It's not something that we acquire. It's not something we burnish ourselves with. It's not something we accessorize with. And sometimes we have that sense of our spiritual path is, I'm going to become more loving, or I'm going to become more wise, I'm going to acquire wisdom. And in fact, I don't think it works that way. I think that awareness, the simple fact of knowing, is intrinsic to our being. It's inalienable, we can't lose it. And it's equally true of love. It's our natural expression. But we can let them be obscured by greed, hatred, and ignorance. And sadly, I think many people have reduced their capacity to be aware and to love. And I mentioned the other evening that I did a little experiment in the airport of just noticing how alert people were, how aware they were. And I was really surprised to see most people were not very alert. And I think it would be an interesting experiment just to, you know, to put on the lenses, as it were, not only of paying attention to how alert people are, you know, just in your daily life, but also to pay attention to how loving they are. Certainly there are many loving beings in the world, but it's interesting to see how defended we can be as well. It's just fascinating to me, actually. We all want to be loved, and we all need to love, and yet we're forever withholding it from each other. It just doesn't make any sense at all. If you need it, and if I need it, let's give it to each other. I think that ultimately it's fear that keeps us from being powerfully aware and powerfully loving. It's ultimately fear that blocks it. Blocks these two things. Because these qualities are the essence of our life, they're that crucial. When we allow them to be covered over or obscured, when we allow these radiant lights to dim, we actually become more deadened. I often quote the Buddha saying, "Those who are mindful come to the deathless, that is, they experience that reality which is beyond life and death." You know, those who are mindful come to the deathless. Those who are not mindful are as if dead already. If we're not aware, if we're not alert, we're deadened. And I think we can equally say, you know, those who are loving come to the deathless. And those who are not loving are as if dead already. Just to share my background, as I was trained as a scholar of English literature. And when I was 28 and in a romantic mood, I climbed over the wall of the Protestant cemetery in Rome in the middle of the night and went looking for the graves of two of my heroes. And it was moonlight, so I was able to find my way around this good-sized graveyard. And I was really determined to find these graves. And one of them I found quite easily because it was covered with flowers. John Keats died at the age of 25 in 1819, I think. And the people are still putting flowers on his grave. I think that's fantastic. People love John Keats. And I was able to actually read in the moonlight his epitaph, which he wrote for himself and which was already engraved on my heart, very Buddhist, very Dharmic. "Here lies a man whose name was written on water." He died at 25. Think how much of your life was kind of realized at 25. So I said, I paid my respects to John. I wish I had a flower. But I also wanted to visit with Percy Bysshe Shelley, who was another member of the visionary company of the English Romantic poets, who's not so loved, but in many ways had even greater power as a poet. He lived to the grand old age of 29. And he was a real visionary. He was a real idealist. He had such a powerful spiritual calling and such powerful expression of spiritual concepts and ideas, feelings. But something happened to Shelley. It was like he got worn down or crushed by the circumstances of the world. Lila made an eloquent gesture during our question and answer period today of saying, you know, saying when you're crushed, and she held her chest like this. Something happened to him, and he wrote a poem. I think he died in about 1821. He wrote a poem. He started a poem called "The Triumph of Life," and it actually wasn't about the triumph of life at all. And it was a horrifying image of a kind of hellish pageant. Some gigantic chariot. You know, they didn't have bulldozers in 1821. So we had to use the image of a chariot, a gigantic chariot that was rolling along, and in it was the figure Death and Life. And it was rolling over people. And he says, "What is life?" I cried. And he actually left the poem unfinished. He ended it. "What is life?" I cried was the first half of a line. And then he went out, and in his inimitable way, he sailed his little boat into a big storm off the coast of Italy, and died that way, essentially a suicide. But just that image of death and life rolling over the living, it just for me gives some kind of idea of how, when we choose to let awareness and love go, we're allowing death and life, in a sense, to take us over. It's so essential that our practice is about cultivating these qualities. And when I say cultivating them, it's essentially, it's not about acquiring them, it's about uncovering them, getting the obscurations away so that they can shine out in their natural state. And by doing that, I think actually we're giving ourselves life, we're giving ourselves vitality. Have you ever had the experience of being around someone who has really developed themselves spiritually and had some sense about how much life was in them? So I'd like to just talk a little bit specifically about how we might apply these two qualities, you know, which are both the means and the end, the means and the goal of our practice, about how we can actually shine, as it were, these two radiant powers of awareness and love into aspects of our lives that are actually really important for our spiritual development. In the area, for example, of our speech, our action, and our livelihood. That is the ethical part of our lives. How we talk, how we communicate, how we act, and how we make our living. One aspect of awareness is that it sees more and more clearly into cause and effect, of coming to understand cause and effect. And the value of that, it's able to see, well, these words, these actions, these ways of making a living will help myself and others and will lead to happiness. You know, you see cause and effect. You see, well, if I do this, it's going to be helpful. And equally, it sees these words, these actions, these ways of working will harm myself and others and will lead to pain. And once we have a choice, we tend to choose for happiness rather than pain. And it's awareness that actually gives us that choice. So the Buddha said, whatever you do to yourself, because there's always a karmic return. I find that little sentence has been so helpful to me when I'm really angry. Like the Dalai Lama, anger is my particular challenge. I'm really angry and I want to blow somebody away. You know, I think, whatever you do to yourself. Well, I guess I won't do that. He also said, anyone who seeks happiness by harming others who seek happiness will never find happiness. So awareness gives us this choice, and given the choice, we're likely to choose happiness. And then the power of love, turning the radiant power, the beaming radiance that the Buddha describes of love, into or onto the realm of words, actions, and ways of working. And what love does is it accepts it all unconditionally and impartially. So we love when help and happiness happen, and we love when harm and pain happen. And this really helps to unpack it all. And I feel that forgiveness is actually an aspect of love in this area of our lives. And forgiveness and awareness work together beautifully. Another thing from the Buddha, a sentence from the Buddha that has really guided my life for years and years, and it's been especially useful this year because I've been very challenged this year. The Buddha said, to understand everything is to forgive everything. I just find that profound. And I've actually found it to be true. Henry Wadsworth Longfellow says, you know, if we could really fully understand the history of our enemies and see all that suffering, they would no longer be our enemies. And if we really come to understand people deeply, understand ourselves when we harm, and understand others when they harm, really make the effort not to stigmatize or stereotype them. They're the enemy because they harmed me. And then dismiss that stereotype, but actually to look with real interest, that's the awareness piece, look to understand. And as we come to understand the cause and effect that actually leads to harming, then it's really possible to forgive. I found that so useful in my life. I've found it useful in recent circumstances in my life of finally I come to a place of really profound love and forgiveness where I've been deeply hurt. And also in earlier parts of my life, my father was very violent. Both of my siblings died as a result of what happened to us as children. And it took some time to really come to make an effort. My father died in 1964, so I'm having to look back over time. But it took some time really to understand this person deeper and deeper and deeper. And as that understanding has deepened, the forgiveness has deepened. At first, I was able to forgive for myself, for what happened to myself. It was a little harder to forgive for what happened to my siblings, but I've gotten to that place as well. So it's possible to shine the radiant light of love and forgiveness everywhere. Dipama, a wonderful teacher, who was my teacher many years ago, said, you don't have to like someone to love them. And that also has been really helpful to me, because there are some people I just don't like, but I can certainly love them, unconditionally love them. It's really a wonderful distinction. And then she says, this is really a challenge. She challenges us. And this was the bodhisattva of metta. I've never seen love so profoundly developed in a human being as it was in Dipama. It was just a force, a power. She was a little shriveled old lady when I knew her. Tiny little woman, sort of like about as small as Mother Teresa. And literally to walk into the room where she was like walking into a force field. And it was the force field of her power of concentration and the force field of her power of unconditional love. So she said to us, love the unlovable. It's a wonderful challenge to love the unlovable. I'm not entirely there yet, but I'm working at it. In terms of, this is just a little aside, but as I was putting this talk together, I just had a memory of years ago talking to a gay man about why we gay people are excluded from the military. It's the only apartheid left in this country, the legal exclusion of a group of people from an institution. And he said, you know why they don't want us? He says, because we won't shoot someone we want to kiss. And then in a second area of our lives that we're turning this radiant beaming light of awareness and love turning it on to another aspect of our lives that's so important for our spiritual development, and that's turning these lights onto pain, onto the experience of pain. You know, it's the instructions that we've given through this retreat, and the instructions I always give. You know, essentially we have two things we do. Is one, we pay attention to what is happening, and we pay attention, I guess it's three things. We pay attention to how we're relating to what is happening, and then we generate unconditional acceptance to that experience. Impartial acceptance. So it's really the simultaneous act of awareness, knowing what's happening. And, you know, let's take an example, a headache. No, if we all had a headache, it's not a pleasant experience. It's kind of central, you know. It's not peripheral. It's not like your finger's aching. It's your brain that's aching. So there's a headache. There's pain in the head. So the first thing to do is to know it for what it is. Pain. That's awareness. It's shining the light into the darkness, and you simply say, "That's a sen-." It's not even pain. We can let go of the concept of pain and say, "This is sensation. It's unpleasant." And then notice the relationship to it, and that's the critical thing, because our suffering always comes from our response to what is happening. It doesn't come. Our suffering never comes from what's happening. So, headache is happening. How are we relating to it? Oh, resistance. I don't want this headache. I want it to go away. This is unpleasant. I can't do my work. I can't have enjoyment. There's too much pain. Resistance. And then the third step. So that's also turning the light, the beaming light of awareness onto our situation to understand how we're relating to our experience. And then the third step is to generate loving acceptance toward what is. Doesn't, you know, love the unlovable, love your headache. And by doing that, by generating loving acceptance, you're actually letting go of the resistance. And when you let go of the resistance, you let go of your suffering. It's really a marvelous experience. It's just such a liberating experience to have intense physical pain and to have no reactivity. It's possible to do that, where you're just not resisting it. You just see it as pain. You know, I often use the example that several years ago now, I got a really bad case of shingles. And that is really painful. You know, it's essentially a virus is attacking the nerves. It was really amazingly painful. And, you know, my mind happened to be in a strong place. I wasn't in retreat, but my mind happened to be very strong at the time that the shingles came on. And so I was able, for hours and hours and hours, simply to observe the pain without reactivity. And then at some point, after hours and hours, my mind got tired. And as soon as my mind got tired, I went into resistance. And so I was actually able to see, oh, here is pain without suffering, because the suffering is resistance. And here's pain with suffering, because the suffering is resistance. It's really very liberating to do that. We can do it equally with painful emotions. I actually find it harder to work with emotions skillfully than I do with physical pain. I've sort of learned how to work physical pain pretty well, but it's, you know, it's like, you know, that there's some way, it's easier to know that a sensation is not me or mine. It's just a sensation. I don't know. For me, it's easier. This is just a sensation. You know, this is not my pain. It's the pain. It's a lot harder with an emotion because we get so tied up in the story associated with the emotion. So if I'm feeling strong anger, you know, to be able to say, this is not my anger, this is the anger. Well, no, it's my anger, you know, and I'm totally justified in being angry at that person. So it's harder. But it's actually possible to train ourselves in the same way, to recognize what is happening, to notice how we're relating to what is happening, and if possible to generate loving acceptance toward what is. Now, is it possible when there's strong anger or any other strong emotion? You know, it might be my particular issue is anger. I'm an aversive type. Yours might be greed. You might be a desire type. You like pleasure. You know, that's your hook. My hook is anger. Your hook may be desire, strong desire. To be able to simply know that desire is only desire, that anger is only anger. It's not me or mine. This is the power of wisdom. It's not self. To be able to see it for what it is and to let go of any form of resistance. Anger itself is resistance. Greed itself is actually resistance, because both of those stances toward the world is not accepting things as they are. You want things to be the way you want to be, want them to be. So anger, I'm offended because things aren't the way I want them to be. Greed, you know, I want it to be different because I want that thing. They're both forms of resistance, and to be able to turn love toward it dissolves the resistance. This is very easy to say. It's not easy to do. And I just want to acknowledge that. This is the steep path of liberation. But do you have some sense about how actually mastering your relationship to physical pain can help you, can really liberate you? And even more, do you have some sense about by training yourself you can actually master your relationship to emotional pain and be liberated in that way? So I'd like to suggest not just 3 steps, but 5 steps in dealing with either a physical, painful physical experience or painful emotional experience. And I just want to say that in the crunch, we're not going to remember these 5 in sequence. But if we train ourselves, you know, to basically to do these things, and, you know, I've been working at it for years, with both physical pain and emotional pain, over time we just get better and better at it. So here's a suggestion, and to see where awareness comes in, the power of awareness and the power of love and how they work together. The first step, and this can be with a headache or it can be with fear. Say fear. So strong physical experience, painful physical experience, or painful emotional experience, the first step is to know it for what it is, to identify it for what it is. This is pain. No, this is physical pain. This is physical sensation. This is fear. Just to identify it for what it is. And often we don't identify. We get so identified, especially with our emotions, that we actually don't see them. We're so absorbed in them and we're so much believing them that we can't actually say, oh, fear is happening here. There have been just any number of times when I've been able to be helpful to people when they're really caught in something and say, have you seen the fear? Oh, the fear. And it just starts to unpack it. So first step, know it. Headache, anger, fear, that's obviously awareness. The second step is to drop the story associated with the experience. So, you know, with especially with physical pain, it might be self-pity. Oh, poor me, I've got this headache. Is that a familiar story? Or the if-only story? If only this would go away, then I could. We have all kinds of stories. And so it's essentially that there is a thought process that's associated with the experience, with the physical pain or with the emotional pain. There's a story. And if we can see that thought process and let the thought process go and just be with the basic experience of the physical pain or the emotional pain. Now, that's hard to do, but you know, we've been practicing that in this retreat thousands and thousands of times. Notice when you're wandering. Where do you wander into? You wander into a story. Let go of the story. Come back. You've done that a lot in this retreat if you've been doing this practice. So we're training ourselves to drop the story. it's not so difficult once we're trained. But also, and this also is an aspect of awareness, to feel it, to feel the emotion in your body. Lila has talked about that. If you drop out of the story, you can feel fear. How does fear express itself in the body? How does anger express itself in the body? How does grief express itself in the body? How does craving, desire express itself in the body? All of them have registrations in the body. And when you can drop down to the physical level and you're actually dealing with the sensations, you're actually unpacking it on the level of cause. If you stay in the story, your attention is going to be drawn out to whatever the object is. You know, that person has offended me and that's why I'm angry, and we're all caught up in that person, and we're not actually here in our bodies dealing with the actual experience of the sensations. So you let the person go, you let the story go, you come back, you feel it in the body. That's also awareness. And then the fourth step is love it. Love the whole situation. You know, love the pain. Love the body feeling the pain. You know, love the emotion. Love that poor suffering being who's feeling the emotion. Just love it all. Just letting go of the resistance. And then finally, the step of equanimity is to let it go when it goes. Sometimes we get so tied up in physical pain that we don't notice when it's gone. and very often we can be so identified with our fear or our anger or our desire, we're so identified with it, we're so much believing it, I am my anger, you know, the anger might have just sort of slipped away all by itself if you hadn't kept feeding it and perpetuating it. Just allow it to go when it goes. And then finally, pain and hardship can actually give us the gift of breaking us open to love. Now, very often when things are going more easily for us in our lives, we can be very defended. We sort of got our reality all put together and got the personality all put together, and we know how to relate. And we can essentially insulate ourselves from having to be very aware or very loving. But sometimes when dramatic things happen to us, very difficult things happen to us, we're broken open and the defenses fall away and the personality doesn't work anymore. And all of the usual conventional things that we have constructed for ourselves get blown away. And in that moment of being blown, of those things being blown away, then there's actually the possibility for us to drop into a place of greater loving. So I'd like to end with a lovely passage from Louise Erdrich. She knows from what she speaks her husband committed suicide. So Louise Erdrich in The Painted Drum, this is just beautiful, you know, of showing us the possibility of how pain can actually serve us. Life will break you. Nobody can protect you from that, and living alone won't either, for solitude will also break you with its yearning. You have to love. You have to feel it. It is the reason you are here on earth. You are here to risk your heart. You are here to be swallowed up. And when it happens that you are broken or betrayed or left or hurt or death brushes near, let yourself sit by an apple tree and listen to the apples falling all around you in heaps, wasting their sweetness. Tell yourself that you tasted as many as you could. So, may we all embody more and more what is natural to us, these natural qualities of awareness and love in our lives. know, may we, in whatever way feels appropriate to us, this practice will do it, but if this practice doesn't fit for you, try another one. There are many ways to come at it. But if to become more and more alert and aware is going to liberate you, and it's going to improve your relationship with everything, including yourself. And as you become more and more and more deeply and unconditionally loving in all situations, that also will liberate you. It feels to me that these two qualities, and again, I'm only speaking personally, but it feels to me that these two special qualities of awareness and love are actually the lenses by which unconditioned reality shines into our conditioned existence. That they are the expressions of the unconditioned in the conditional world. So let's sit for just a minute.